This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 176 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, I'm really, really well. We return with sort of apologies, I suppose, don't we, Bruce?
A little bit.
A little bit. Well, you know, we're busy men. Me particularly is you know, I'm particularly to blame here, folks. Bruce has been after me for weeks, and I've basically just my evenings have been ridiculous. Yeah. So don't blame, you know, Bruce for this. It's all my fault, folks. On any nasty, you know, emails going to studio@audiotu.com. With any, you know, it's all my fault. So if you got a, you know, bone to pick about Shutters Inc., it's me, all right? That's me just, I'm taking a bullet for you here, Bruce, but it's true.
Well, I appreciate that, mate. But you were right in the first instance that we are both really busy. And it's just that trying to get the planets to align every week, you know, it's just crazy. But interesting that you should mention the email addresses, because I do want to mention to people, I think there are some listeners out there who have, from the earlier days of this podcast, got in their email address books, studio@audiotu.com, and I would like to ask everybody, could you just take 1 minute just to dive into your address book? If you've got an email address for Shutters Inc., and it turns out to be studio@audiotu.com, could you please change it to theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com? Because what's been happening over the last couple of weeks is I've been getting a stack of email that Shelton is not getting. And obviously, excuse me, the whole purpose of setting up the boys at ShuttersIncPodcast.com as an email alias was so that we could both receive any messages that came through so that we were both across it. So, yeah. End of this community service announcement. On with your regularly scheduled programming.
Because I like to get your emails too, folks. you know, so we can talk about them off air, and then you know, pick the good ones, and you know, discard all the rubbish. So we can, you know, we can sort of prepare our podcast and answer your questions. So I haven't got all of them, but you know, certainly looking forward to discussing a few of them tonight. Because we're basically talking about a subject that has raised a fair few questions and comments and raised eyebrows, and that's the subject of composition. Mm-hmm. It's been quite interesting, hasn't it, mate?
Definitely, and it's good to get some feedback from people about it. It seems that this has been a topic that, as you say, has certainly garnered some interest amongst the listeners, so it's good to know that we're on the mark there.
Good, good. Well, who should we start with, Bruce?
Oh, look, I don't mind. Did you want to read one of the ones that you've got?
I'm still, would you believe it? My Outlook is still collecting emails from opening it up and talking with you. I've been away, so I'm looking for the one particularly from Kerry. Have you got that in front of you?
I can very, very, very quickly get hold of it. The Hard and Soft of Photography.
That's the one.
Hi, Shelton and Bruce. It's been a while since I've emailed. I, like a lot of others I expect, simply enjoy the podcast. I drive along in my car listening, nodding in agreement, giggling, and generally gleaning as much information as possible. I am a very bad photographer. I haven't picked up my camera for a long while. In a previous email, I mentioned that I have lost the passion for photography. To a large extent, that is still true. I don't seem to have time to stop and photograph the roses at the moment, but that's probably a convenient cop-out. In previous emails, you've discussed the hard and soft sides of photography. The hard side of photography is very much a process like mathematics. Once you know the algebra of photography, you just need to practice to come up with the correct formula. The soft side of photography is a very different animal. I'm an accountant, so the hard side is easier for me to grasp. The soft side, the creative side, is very difficult for me. I have difficulty seeing things like others do. If someone shows me a photograph and tells me how they did it, I can understand their process and perhaps even reproduce it. But having to read a scene and visualize creatively how I want my picture to be is something out of my reach at the moment. Composing a picture is a subjective and individual process. I understand the heart of composition, i.e. rule of thirds, S-curve, leading lines, perspective, etc. But how I use these creatively to produce a photograph instead of a snapshot is elusive. I'm really enjoying the series on composition and hope it will inspire me. You mentioned being brave with composition. I'm not afraid to dive in. I just don't know what swimsuit to wear. Regards, Kerry. Before you jump in,
yeah.
I just want to say I totally understand where Kerry's coming from because I feel exactly the same way.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. You can throw me all the technical side of it and I can take that in my stride. But then I look at the stuff that you and Glenn come up with, you know, in your workshops, and I just go, man, how did they see that in their head before doing it? You know, once I've seen it, I can go out and mimic it. That's easy as. You know, once you, as Kerry said, once you understand the hard side of it, that's easy. You can look at a shot or, you know, see someone else do a shot and you can go, okay, I understand what they did there. I can go out. I can reproduce that because I know the angle they used. I can look at the image and see that it was a wide angle or it was a telephoto lens or whatever. You know, there are giveaways in the picture that tell you what the focal length was. You know, so I know the positioning they had and the focal length they used, and I can look at the depth of field and gauge what aperture they shot at, and I can see that there was fill flash, and, you know, I can dissect an image and probably recreate it, but coming up with that creative vision in the first place, that's the bit that I find really elusive.
But I'm wondering whether there really is anything new under the sun anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In the sense that if we come up with something, it's usually either inspired by something we've seen or a variation on something we've done before. I often compare photography with music, and there are so many songs based on three chords, and yet every time, you know, if you're a guitar player, you know that a D followed by a C add 9 followed by a G has, you know, 30,000 songs attached to it. A minor, G, and F has 30,000 songs attached to it, and yet all of those songs are different.
Yeah.
The components are the same. You know, the chord structure, the relationships are all the same, but the song is different. It has different lyric content, different arrangement of instruments, different melody. I wonder whether it's not the same with photography. And I'm wondering whether if we think we have to be so totally original when we take a photograph, if that is actually the process that blocks us from doing it. Don't know. I'm just thinking, you know, is there anything really new under the sun? I think if you apply, and this is what Kerry was saying, she knows all the things. And I tell you what, just by her mentioning those things means that she has a greater knowledge of creative techniques, compositional techniques, even as you do, than a lot of people do. You would mention things like perspective and viewpoint and leading lines and rules of thirds and all those kinds of things to say the newcomer to photography or to many who've been around for a while, and they wouldn't really understand, not really understand, what you're talking about. But just by knowing those things, I'm wondering whether she already has a distinct advantage, as you do, and it's just a matter of maybe not being quite so hard on yourself. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there.
Well,
but I know a good friend of mine, Ian Rolfe, a good friend of mine. You've met Ian, haven't you, Bruce?
I think I may have.
Yeah. He's a really lovely guy. I've known him for 30 years, and he's a landscape photographer. He doesn't, you know, I think I've mentioned him on this podcast before.
Yes.
To him, a wedding is a huge landscape with two people stuck somewhere in the middle of it. You know, I suppose if I have to put you in the shot, here, just stand there. He doesn't shoot anything really other than landscape, but his landscape work is incredible. He and I and Peter Walton will be leading a landscape workshop through California in May. So if you're interested in coming, let me know. The three of us are going to be doing landscapes. And, you know, Peter Walton's one of Australia's premier landscape shooters, as is Ian Rolfe. Me, I'm just going along for the ride. But I can work my way around a landscape. But here's the thing. Yes, I can work my way around a landscape, even though they don't really turn me on all that much. And why? Because I know all the things that Kerry knows and all the things you know. I would just look at a landscape and apply the rules. So there's a rock, so there's my foreground, bottom third.
So it's just a formulaic approach is what you're saying.
It is. Mm. It is. And Ian Rolfe, getting back to Ian, is exactly what he does. If you analyze his landscapes, and they are beautiful, he always follows a certain kind or a certain process of formulas to differing degrees. One formula, one photograph may have 70% rule of thirds, 30% leading line. The other photograph may have an 80% leading line and 20% rule of thirds application.
Can I play devil's advocate here?
Yeah.
Because couldn't you argue that the landscape photographer who looks for, you know, the foreground interest of, you know, one big rock on the beach or, you know, the hero tree in the landscape is no different to the way you would treat a human being as a subject within a frame?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
So is there really a difference? Is it maybe just the photographer's approach to that genre of photography?
It is. Look, I think. And again, I'll come back to music. The same chords and the same notes and the same scales apply to every musician in the world.
Sure.
And yet, the infinite variety of songs and pieces of music continues to promulgate the world and continues to feed us with new and interesting things to listen to. And yet, the same rules apply to every, you know, the same chord relationships, you know, in minors and majors, and the same, chord structures apply, as we've just said, and yet the songs are always different. I think the same thing applies in photography, in that really essentially when it comes to arranging the elements, I think it's a matter of percentages. What it breaks down to is, well, I'm going to, whereas someone might apply, well, you might put your tripod right next to mine in a landscape and see it, as often happened with me, so completely different to me. You'd see the leading line over there and make that 70% worth of your composition, whereas I might take the horizon and make that up in the top third or bottom third 70% of my reason for composing.
Right.
We're in the same place at the same time, but we have placed different priorities on the elements or the techniques, you might say, of composition. Even as in songwriting or in song arranging, you can take the same song and make it sound so completely different. You know, Paul Anka has done that album Rock Swings, and he's taken, you know, songs like Black Hole Sun and swung them.
Really?
Yeah, I love that album. I gotta tell you, he's got Black Hole Sun, he's got Jump by Van Halen, The Way You Make Me Feel by Michael Jackson. He swung them.
Are you serious?
You could go back 50 years, 60 years, play them to Sinatra, and he'd want to record them. That's what they sound like. You know, they could have been on Songs for Swingin' Lovers, right? They're on that album.
Right.
So it's the same song, the same chords, the same lyrics, the same notes, with a completely different priority of arrangements of instruments, sounds, and, you know, and levels.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering whether photography is not exactly the same and Kerry is expecting too much from herself, as you also might be. Hmm. I mean, Glenn and I, we come up with stuff, but it's based on stuff either we've done before or seen before in principle. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, there is really nothing new under the sun. What's different is this is a different landscape. I'm in a different place at a different time of day. And it might be the same place, but it might be 10 meters different. So the tree is closer. The rock is closer. The old abandoned tractor in the landscape. That's, you know, I haven't even worried about that this time. In terms of people photography, the same rules. I apply many of the same rules, just with different faces, different situations, different light.
Yep.
So it's just a variation, an infinite variation, like music. It's an infinite variation of all the elements that come together to make a photograph. But the principle of the elements and their you know reason for being is exactly the same.
Hmm.
So we will, as photographers, find ourselves repeating ourselves a lot. But the images will be completely different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, okay.
I was hoping that it'd make you feel better, Bruce.
Well, I guess yes and no, because the analogy I draw from my audio experience is and I think I've mentioned this before, is that I know of audio engineers who fall back on the same tricks over and over again.
Yeah.
And you try as much as you can not to be like that. And I know with my audio work, I do tend to be like that sometimes. If you are devoid of an idea, you do fall back on the things that you know work.
Yep.
Exactly. And I guess you're right. Maybe, you know, photography is much the same. And I guess that's why we have to just keep practicing and pushing ourselves.
Yeah.
Just to try and not, you know, try to break out of those, you know, easy to fall back into stereotypical setups.
Yes, yes.
But I don't know, you and Glenn always just seem to pull out some magic that seems different, even if it's not to you, it seems like it is to me.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that if you look at my photographs, you know, they follow formulas.
Sure.
I updated my blog today and I'm looking at the photographs now. And they follow formulas, but the images are a different place, different time.
Definitely.
But, you know, I really will often apply the same rules to make it work. If I'm shooting a wedding and, you know, I'm tired or, you know, my mojo just isn't working, I will fall back on the things that work.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even as an audio technician, you may apply the same recording techniques to a, you know, or you may, say, be recording a guitar. How many times have you recorded a guitar in your lifetime?
Too many.
Yeah, yeah. But the variables are infinite. The proximity of the mic, the digital effect you might apply, do you want to flange it, do you want to put a chorus on it, do you want to put a delay on it, how much reverb do you want to put on it, you know, how much compression,
mm-hmm.
All of those things. And you could play the same three chords over and over again, record them all a different way, but it's the same three chords.
Yeah.
One will have compression, the other one will have flange, you know?
Yeah.
I think in photography it is the same, and we need to understand that we will be repeating ourselves a lot, but we'll find the joy in creating beautiful images by simply repeating ourselves in terms of the principles that we use. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think of songwriters like Steve Miller, some of the old classics from, you know, the 70s from my era, right when I was growing up. And I think of the songs, you can basically pick up a guitar and in 3 minutes work out the whole song, because they've gone for the first, fourth, and fifth of the scale with a related minor most of the time.
Yeah.
Right? Somewhere along the way. So the formula is the same, the song is different. And in photography, I think that's what you're going to come across.
Hmm.
You know? And so, Kerry, I suppose that's if you're trying to be original every single time, I don't really know that you can be, but I think you're missing out on a lot by not getting your camera out and taking photographs, because the principles will apply, but the photograph will be different. You know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for just getting out there and doing it.
Yes.
You know, you can read all the technical help manuals until the cows come home, but until you actually get out there and just pick up the camera and do it and do it and do it and do it and learn from experience.
Yes.
Yes. I can certainly vouch for that method.
Just get the joy of creating a different image. But, you know, perhaps vary the interplay. I mean, I will in a photograph use several different compositional techniques in the one photograph. If I'm doing, for instance, a portrait that includes a person's shoulders, let's say from the biceps up, right?
Yep.
I will try and use the shoulders as a leading line from the corner. But I'll still try and put the eyes in a dynamic third position.
Yep.
You know? So, but the percentage, you know, of reliance upon why the image works will shift between photographs, because the next photograph may not use a leading line at all. But, you know, it might have a completely different reason. Or it may use less concentration on the leading line, more concentration on the eyes because I've maybe come closer or something like that. And I think where we get the joy is the interplay of percentage between the compositional techniques that we employ. If we were always doing leading lines, that would drive us nuts. If we were always, you know, 80-90% reliant on the rule of thirds, that would drive us nuts. But your priorities, your percentages of interplay between the techniques will give you an infinite variety of photographs. But you'll always in the back of your head be saying, oh, maybe I should lead that from the corner. Or, oh, maybe I should put those up in the dynamic third where they intersect up there in the top left-hand section. You'll always be saying things like that to yourself, but the photograph works. That to me is the interesting thing about art, is that it is full of formulas. But then the whole universe is based on formulas, mathematical formulas.
Yep.
You know? So as a person who believes in a great mind behind the universe, I would say that that person fell back on formulas. And that formula is clearly seen by what Fibonacci discovered in the 15th century. I think it was the 15th century. That much of the compositional makeup of the universe is based on the Fibonacci principle of mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
So the great mind behind the universe, let's call him God, he fell back on exactly the same things, but with a whole bunch of other variables thrown in, you know.
The lazy bugger.
But you look at the variables.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Fibonacci finds itself as a mathematical principle in everything from the Orion Nebula right down to
conch shell.
Yeah, conch shell and even smaller things, right? Mm-hmm.
Cochlear of the ear.
Right. Yep.
I've lost you, haven't I?
You've lost me. Lost me completely. Yeah.
Sorry.
Station tube. But, you know, the acorns and fractal mathematics. Fractal mathematics is in everything in creation. So, and yet we don't, we will live an entire lifetime and barely scratch the surface of things we see, and all of them will be different. You know, the potential of things that are on this planet to see, we will live an entire lifetime and just scratch the surface of the things that we can see. Mm. And yet they're based on similar principles. And in photography, it's exactly the same. It's not that, I think we need to just get past the fact that we use certain techniques all the time and just get on to creating unique images by using the same techniques. The uniqueness is in what we use those principles to create and not the principles themselves, because the principles are solid, stable, immovable, time-tested, and the thing is, those principles appeal to our innate nature of composition. Trying to break those or find new ground there, I think, is impossible at this stage, but I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just boring. But it's not so much I don't think we should strive to find new techniques but maybe we should strive to vary the balances and vary the interplay of the subject within the frame. If you're photographing people all the time, you're going to get sick of doing the same thing over and over. But you won't be able to break away from the principles all that often, I don't think. I really believe that. I've found that to be the case in my photography, but maybe I'm just repetitive. The thing that I can say is that unlike Ian, and this is not a criticism of Ian because I'd love to shoot landscapes and see them like he does, but unlike him, I can shoot pretty much anything. But every time I do, whether it be a landscape, a portrait, a still life, a product shot, you know, any social comment photograph, whatever it might be, I use principles all the time of composition, light, you know, and framing, etc. So I think those rules apply across the board, no matter what we're shooting, but the shot, the feel, the principle, the idea, the subject content, the place, the time, the light, the perspective, the lens, all of those things are going to be completely different. So there's an infinite variable of the tools that you use, just like there is in music. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have so many images, every single one of them different, and yet every single one of them, in principle, the same. Even as we have so much music, and every single song is different, and yet, in principle, the rules apply.
Yeah.
So, Kerry, get your camera out, stop mucking around, and take some pictures. That's all I'm going to say on it.
Oh. Should we read another email?
Yeah, let's.
Okay, let's see what we've got here. I've got one from Jim Felder, who said, "Hey there, my friends. I'm glad you shared this info about composing and reminding me about how I take family photos at family gatherings. We get together with family every holiday. It's the same old images, only different clothes, different holiday. It makes
see,
me
he's
think,
in my book. He's already, you know, he's already agreeing with me.
It makes me think I'm going to put on an 85mm 1.8 on one camera and my 50mm 1.8 on my other and shoot close-ups. I'm tired of the same old shots, just different times. These people are on the couch. These people are at the table. My wife's standing at the kitchen counter preparing or cleaning. Now I'm going to try to remember to use longer focal lengths and get closer, even for portraits. It seems I use this idea more with portraits, but not as often as I should. I'm okay with cutting off one's head at the top or even framing the shot with their face and body, leaving a lot of air on the rest of the image. I have to think hard not to compose like the traditional portrait bust shot. Thanks, guys. I'm really enjoying having your podcast show up on my iPod again. Been missing you. Good on you, mate, as you guys would say. Thanks, Jim Felder.
Well, I think Jim's just come in at a perfect time there, Bruce.
Yeah.
Because he's photographing the same old thing, but he's just going to use different techniques.
Yeah.
Really? You know, when you boil his email down, that's what I get from it.
Well, I tried the same thing only a couple of days ago. I don't know if you saw the shots that I put up on Facebook, but in 15 minutes and using only scrap material that I had lying around the house, I created a softbox.
Right.
And then got Kath to model for me. And, I certainly got in tighter than I normally do based on your comments in the last couple of podcasts, and was pretty happy with some of the shots that I got.
Is this your random stuff folder that you're talking
about?
That's
the one. There's just two pictures of Kath. Yeah.
And, well, the softbox sure worked.
Yeah.
There you go. And, yes, you're nice and close. I like the one on the right more than the one on the left, but they're both nice and close. And,
The one with the hair over the face,
because all you're seeing is the eye, and you place the eye in a nice sort of strong position. And yet the other one's very pleasant as well.
Yeah, well, the other one is now Kath's Facebook profile pic.
Oh, okay. There you go. It's always an honor when someone chooses your photograph for their Facebook profile. What were you thinking when you went through that process? Like, what was your, you know, mental process there? Were you conscious of doing?
To be honest, I was more practicing softbox techniques than I was composition techniques. But at the time that I was shooting, I don't know. Maybe that's not true. Maybe I was focusing on both at the same time. But I was keeping in mind your thing of just get closer, get closer.
Yeah.
And I think the one that Kat's using as a profile shot was shot on my 135-28 from, you know, probably a metre and a half, 2 metres away.
Right.
And the other one's shot on my 28-70 from about 30 centimetres away.
Right.
So, yeah, and it was just a case of, you know, those comments that you'd made in the last couple of podcasts about, you know, get close, get closer, and then get closer still, were still kicking around in my head. And so I thought, well, you know, it's not like it's expensive film that I'm burning up here. Let's just try it and see what happens, you know?
Yeah, no, that's right. That's exactly right.
It costs nothing to experiment these days.
No. Well, you learned, look, if anything, what you basically stepped out of your normal process in that. So you really have taken that principle and just made a variation on it. You stepped outside your normal process. As we said, you got that a little bit closer. You really filled the frame with the subject, and were, you know, very, very defined subject, aka your wife's face.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that's all that really appears in the photograph, and yet that's all that really needs to appear in the photograph.
Yeah.
But in that process, even though the principles and techniques are the same, you've made a variation on it. Stepped outside your normal process. So, you know, I hearken back to the, you know, what we were saying earlier. But it works. It works because I think there's an infinite variable of application of those techniques within that little frame that we use to, you know, make our images in. Jim, you're absolutely, I think what you did is absolutely fantastic, because you've taken, well, something that many would consider as not a creative opportunity, family photographs at a family event. We would just boil it down and say, we're going to do some, snapshots of the family 1 year on. Let's see how we've changed. Let's take these memories. But I like the fact that you've said, no, I'm going to change lenses. I'm going to get in there with an 85 and a 50, and I'm just going to rock it up this time. And it'll be the same people in similar places, but you'll use, or rather, should I say, you'll prioritize with a different percentage or a different balance, a different photographic technique. Therefore, changing the look of the photographs this year from anything you would have done last year.
So, anticipating Jim's next email.
Yep.
How do you shoot a group portrait and make it different?
Well, I suppose
shooting an individual portrait is a lot easier because you've only got one subject to deal with within the frame. That is one face.
Yes.
When you've got half a dozen, what are your options there?
Well, group arrangement in terms of the plane, that the group, are they in different planes, some further from the camera, some closer. The arrangement of faces, the arrangement of bodies, the place, there's so many ways to arrange different groups, especially when there's furniture involved. If you can sit, stand, etc. around a couch, you've got so many different ways that you can do that. A lot of people make the mistake of just leaving people where they are and not actually spending a moment to, put groups together and arrange them in some sort of flow whereby we minimize the distance rather between faces and heads. We create a compositional flow and make it look pleasant, as pleasant as we possibly can. The variables there are quite incredible, really. But either we'll line people up, in one long line, stand there, be nice. And stand straight and bang, or we'll spend a minute and arrange people like we would arrange the elements in a frame, especially the elements that we have control over to move. If you were doing a still life and you had, a few bits of food that you were going to arrange into a food photo, you can move them around. Well, in a group photo, you do exactly the same thing. But remembering that what you really want to do is compose an image. So you will use leading lines, arms, shoulders, legs. You'll use faces in dynamic positions, and you'll make them flow through the frame if you possibly can. It takes a long time to arrange a group like that. And even, experienced group photographers will always have that moment of, oh boy, how the heck do I fit this person in? But if all you really do is just try to remember your rules and principles and guidelines of composition when you're putting a whole bunch of faces within a frame, it's exactly the same principle as still life. It's just that these are living, breathing, complaining individuals.
Yeah, fair enough.
Hence the reason I like to stick to one person at a time.
Because you can kill them and hide the body and no one will know.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's absolutely true. You can't do that with a bit of food. Really. Was there another email you wanted to read?
We'll go with one more email. I've got a ton here, but we're not just going to be able to get through them all. So we'll call this the last one for the podcast. This was from Richard Biancini, whom we've heard from before.
Yes.
Hey guys, first off, I hope none of your family or friends were injured in that awful quake in New Zealand. We're wishing them all the best. Well, thankfully not for me, Shelton.
No friends or family. I was hoping that my good friend Mike Holman and his wife weren't in any danger, but they live in the North Island, so and they travel the world a lot because they work for an airline, so yeah. They weren't injured at all. But it was a terrible thing, and thank you for thinking of our friends to the east.
Absolutely. On a lighter note, I wanted to chime in on the subject of visual mass or weight. This is an extremely interesting idea and can really aid a photographer in creating dynamic compositions. David DeShemin waxed eloquently on the subject in his 2009 book Within the Frame, see page 90. This is an extremely thought-provoking book that is focused on expressing your creative vision effectively. You may already own this book. If not, I would highly recommend it. It was very well received in the photo community when it was released. In case you don't have the book, he also covers this in his ebook, Drawing the Eye, which I have attached for you to review. David has a business selling these ebooks, so please do not distribute this PDF. I've only included it so that you can use it as a teaching tool. David also runs a site called Craft and Vision where he sells ebooks. Some are authored by him and others by well-respected names in the industry. These are beautiful ebooks and iOS apps on a variety of photographic topics. They are narrowly focused on a small subject and beautifully illustrated. Best of all, they're only $5 each. Glad you're back. I missed hearing you two. Looking forward to the upcoming episodes, Rich Biancini.
Yes. Yes. I appreciate you sending that through too, Rich. Very much so. Thank you for that.
Yep. So visual weight.
Visual weight.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a really interesting term. Because,
what does he mean by it? Does it just come down to the percentage of the frame that that particular element fills?
Or should fill. And this is where I think a lot of photographers get it wrong, and that is they ascribe the wrong weight or not enough or perhaps too much to the wrong things. They will often be a little bit afraid of giving something too much weight, or perhaps give everything in the frame more weight than it deserves. If something has visual weight within the image, then it has a reason to be there. How much it weighs is how much importance, I suppose, you want to give to it. A face within an image has, well, in the portraits of Kath that you were just talking about, has all the weight, 100% of the weight.
Sure.
But if you had decided to pull back a little bit because she's just bought herself a nice new blouse, then the blouse has a little bit of weight, but how much weight? You know, if it was a picture of you on your bicycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much weight are you going to give all of the bike? Or you're just going to include the handlebars, because really the photograph is about Bruce, and handlebars are enough to indicate that Bruce likes cycling.
Sure.
You know, so visual weight is the thing, is to me, and this is just, you know, off the top of my head without actually reading this particular book, but to me the term applies to, you know, let's say a frame carries with it 100 kilograms. You know, what's going to be 70 kilograms? What's going to be 4 kilograms? What's going to be 22 kilograms? And what's going to be, you know, you have to decide what grabbed your eye, what has been the reason for this photograph, then describe what needs to be in the photograph with it, and ascribe it some weight. But the balance, the amount of visual weight that you give something indicates to the viewer how important it is in the photograph. But that weight is not just space. We might think that something big in the frame is the weighty thing, but it may not be the case. Sometimes it's the small thing that weighs the biggest. Imagine a photograph, say for instance, of a horizon low in the composition, at least on the lower third. Green grass, blue cloudless sky, and a tree on the horizon. Mm-hmm. What are you going to see?
The tree.
Yeah. So it's small. It might only be, you know, it might only take up 15% of the height of the entire frame, if that. But it's the thing you see.
Yep.
So you have ascribed it a lot of weight, even though it doesn't necessarily take up that much space. But by your compositional placement, by the fact that you have all this empty negative space saying nothing, in other words, it has no weight at all, the tree, even though small, has tremendous weight because of how you've, you know, because it's not competing with anything. There it is, you know. So there are so many ways that a photographer jumbles and balances all of these things within the frame to say, hey, this is what this photograph is about. And the thing that has the greatest weight would, to me, be the thing that has, you know, that is, well, let's say the subject, the reason for the photograph having been created in the first place.
It's funny that you should have mentioned that it doesn't necessarily need to be the size, because I was thinking, and I'm fairly sure it was one of your images, of a field full of green plants and one red flower.
Yes, is that's
that,
one of mine.
That is one of yours, yeah.
Yeah.
Because in that, I guess the red flower has the weight.
And even though it's
even
very
though it's
small,
very small frame. Within the frame.
Yes, and that's a thank you for that. I'm trying to think of an image that I've taken where that applies, but that is the image that you could say absolutely. It's just a field of, it's just green, 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 boom, red.
Yeah.
And what's the first thing you look at? Boom.
You can't miss it. Yeah.
No, you know, there it is. It's, I suppose, imagine a blank piece of paper, and then suddenly you get out a black felt pen, and you put a dot on that. You know, on that black bit of on that white bit of paper. And then you say, you show the bit of paper to someone and you say, what is this? And they say, it's a black dot. And you could say, well, no, it isn't. It's a white piece of paper. Right? But really, the weight, there's so much weight on that black dot.
It's the elephant in the room, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. So it's a really interesting point, and I love that description, is visual weight. Mm. I suppose let's consider that when we are composing or let's say ascribing weight to the elements in the or within the frame before we before we take the photograph. And to finish off our podcast this week, I wanted to talk about something we were going to talk about last time, and that was breathing.
Right.
Thankfully you reminded me before the podcast. You wanted to say this, and I did. I wanted to talk about breathing, and I'm not literally talking about actual breathing, but I'm talking about giving yourself breathing space when you're taking a photograph. We get excited by the prospect of taking a photograph. That's what we as photographers do. We see something, we go, ooh, I've got to take a photograph of that. We get all our technicalities right, and we know it's 250th at f/2.8, and we've got that all right, and we're spot metered for it, and it's going to be lovely, bam. And then we compose really badly.
Right.
You know, there's no point in that. But the problem is that we have gotten into this excitement, and we really need to stop. And it only takes a few seconds, maybe not even that, to just disengage. To me, the process of taking a photograph is engagement, emotional engagement. Absolutely. I'm excited. I have this emotional urge, this creative urge to photograph, create an image from this thing, the scene, whatever it is that I see before me. So we engage emotionally, but therein is the problem, because in all creative things, there's the creative and the scientific aspect, mm-hmm. The technical, right? The hard and the soft. Where we get, we're engaged, but if we don't disengage and think, then all of our emotional intent, all of our creative intent is blown, completely blown off by the fact that we haven't stopped to think it through. And this takes us back to the beginning of our podcast, whereby, we have all these principles that Kerry was talking about in her email.
Yep.
Leading lines, perspective, rule of thirds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, repetition, negative, positive space. We have all of those things. You have to stop and weigh those things up, right? And put them all in their proper space. Think mathematically, think logistically, think in principles, however it is your mind works, compose the image. That's and then now that you've disengaged creatively, disengaged emotionally, or you're still engaged creatively, but you've sort of disengaged emotionally. You've engaged logistically, creatively, put all those principles and rules in their academic sense within the frame. Then re-engage emotionally, get excited, tweak the image from your heart, and take the photograph. If you're just rushing through everything, you're never going to get the photographs you want. Take a breath when you're creating your next image. Who's in a hurry anyway? Very rarely are we in a hurry. Very rarely does something happen so damn quick that we got no time to think. You know, that's war photography. That's you know, that's
photojournalism.
That's guys dodging bullets. In our everyday life, we've got 3 seconds, we've got 5 seconds, we've got, well, how long does it take? 1 second, 2 seconds? Really, seriously, to make those decisions? We've got that. And if you don't take that little bit of breathing space to think about the opportunities that you have laid out before you and ascribe them the proper weight, value, and placement within the image, no matter how technically supreme your image might be, from a exposure sense, depth of field, whatever, if you don't compose the shot, if you don't breathe through it, it won't be what you want it to be. I see that happening all the time at workshops, and it's just, and I know it's because people are saying, oh, well, there's other people, I don't want to take too much time. And yet I wonder whether they're in their own photography, they're exactly the same way. So before, you know, and that's not a criticism, I'm not trying to be smart, I'm just saying, you know, think it through. Really stop and get emotional, engage, but disengage. Think it through, re-engage, press the shutter.
Now, have you thought ahead to the next episode and what you want to cover in the next episode of this series?
I'd like to talk about the frame of the image itself, the outer frame, and how we can use it to balance out the geometrical elements within the frame, and how we often forget that the outside is just as much a compositional guide as, you know, any of the elements within. So maybe we can talk about that in the next podcast.
Okay, because what I was going to suggest was something that you've mentioned in passing many, 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 many moons ago on the podcast, but we've never really covered it as a topic, is the concept of walking the arc.
Okay.
And I was just thinking, as you were talking about, you know, not rushing your shot, that kind of ties in.
Yes.
You know, well, I don't want to take the words out of your mouth, and I think it's worth holding on to for the next episode. Maybe we could cover those two topics in the next episode.
Absolutely. What a great idea. Full points to you there, mate, because it is something we highlight at our workshops all the time, walking the arc. So, yes, we'll do both those things in the next podcast if we don't get caught up with other silly things like the giggle, giggle, crap, crap we go on with from time to time.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, good idea. Let's do that. And if you've got a comment to make on that front, if you've been to one of our workshops at Creative Photo Workshops, or you know exactly what we're talking about and you want to talk about it, send us an email. And what is that email address? Again, Bruce?
theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.
Fantastic.
And speaking of CPW, what have you guys got coming up in the next week or two?
Well, we're going to be in Brisbane on Monday. That's Monday the 21st.
Yep.
For a flash workshop. Wednesday of that week, we have our abandoned homestead shoot down here in Melbourne. And we've just finished our Castlemania event, which was a weekend away in the old gold-digging part of Victoria,
and
Castlemaine.
Those shots looked awesome.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. It was a great weekend. It was a very sunny weekend.
I actually wanted to ask you about that because obviously you got some new product to play with.
Well, yep.
Did you want to talk about those?
Sure. We used our new Elenchrom Ranger Quadras, which are just fantastic.
Now, I want to ask. What is the guide number on those things?
Still haven't quite worked that out.
It's going to be a guide number of 140.
They're not. Well, they are pretty powerful, but not that powerful.
Really?
I think they're only of a guide number of about 40 in meters at 100 ISO.
No, they must be more powerful than that.
Well, it's a 400 watt second battery. So I'm going to have to work out the guide number. I've never been a fan of watt seconds because I don't know what the hell a watt second is. I mean, a watt second, big deal. How does that tell me what my aperture is? But if I know guide number divided by distance equals aperture, I can work it out.
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't put guide numbers on them. But, of course, I suppose a guide number will vary depending on what reflector you use, what softbox you use. And so it's, you know, it's funny territory. But they should.
Yeah, but you can account for that stuff on the fly. Yeah. What's wrong with having a guide number?
I know. Tell me about it. But they should say is, look, This flash, with the reflector that comes with it, is a guide number of 48 at 100 ISO in meters. Then you could go, ripper, beauty. Okay, that's 12 meters away. That's F4, you know?
Yeah.
You could do that.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to have to do is set this thing up in a room. I'm going to get my flash meter a meter away, and I'm going to go full power, boom. And whatever F-stop it gives me, that's its guide number.
Mm. You know? The reason I asked was just because there were some fantastic shots where you'd shot into a model's face but with the sun behind them, and
yep.
Just the amount of light it was throwing into the subject was fantastic.
It is pretty cool. The flash head itself may have been just out of frame, so you may be talking only 1 or 2 meters away from the actual subject.
Right.
In which case, you're still at a guide number of, say, 30 or 40. You're still getting F22, F32 at 100 ISO.
Yeah.
So you're able to overpower the sun a fair bit at F32. You know, at 250th, you can actually deepen the ambient and allow the flash to be a primary light source.
Mm.
So we did work them hard over the weekend. You know, we ran all batteries all day. By the end of the day, they were dead.
Yep.
We had to charge them up overnight for day number two. But boy, those things are awesome. We absolutely love the Rangers. They're the Ranger Quadras. We used them again last night. We did an emerging nymph shoot again last night, which is now on our Creative Photo Workshops fan page on Facebook.
Seen those shots. They look great too.
It was a great night. It really was. But again, the Quadras came into their own. I've spoken about them just today on my blog as well.
Yep.
We really love this piece of equipment. If you are a person who likes location lighting, but you want to carry it around in a briefcase and have a hell of a lot of power, damn, these things are perfect. Absolutely perfect.
What are they worth to buy?
A two-head kit with two batteries and a power pack complete with leads, Skyport, and the Skyport remote trigger that comes with it. About $2,500 in Australia.
Okay.
About $2,500 in Australia. But, you know, if you're a wedding photographer, location portrait photographer, anything like that, they'll pay for themselves in very quickly.
Yeah.
And you don't look like they pack away in a briefcase and you put it in your car. You know?
Nice.
They are fantastic. And they even have modeling lights, which are white balance, which is fantastic. So, you know, they are really, really great. We love them, and that's why we chose to go to Ellen Crom and say, hey, we want a couple of these. And, you know, we worked out a sort of sponsorship arrangement through Creative Photo Workshops, and they loved it. They, you know, and we love them because they are just fantastic pieces of equipment. So if you're listening to this and thinking, I'm sick of setting up strobes, you know, on a stand with 4 AA's and they always run out, and you do a lot of work, you're always at a wedding or doing, you know, a shoot, portrait shoot, location work, you want to carry around lighting in a briefcase, this thing is awesome.
Mm.
Really.
Mm. You're going to cost me a lot of money, mate.
Sorry, mate. What can I say?
All right. Should we wrap it up?
You bet.
Thank you once again.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you again, mate.
Definitely.
And we'll catch up again soon. And, of course, thank you. I'd like to thank all the people who did send emails. It's very nice that you take a minute out.
Absolutely.
To write to us and give us your perspective. If we haven't had a chance to read your email out, it doesn't mean we won't, and it doesn't mean we don't appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
We really do. So please keep them coming.
Definitely.
They help us formulate all the discussion, you know, in this podcast, which we still enjoy doing for you after all of these years.
Absolutely. All right, mate. Well, hopefully we'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it, mate. You take care of yourself.
You too. See ya.
See ya. Shutters Inc.
For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.
This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.